say KBO of Portland, Full Strength Community Radio. This is Kabaka Pyramid representing from Kingston, Jamaica. Baby Rock family, you don't know.
Hey, Mr. DJ, put a record on. I wanna dance with my baby.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the first Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
How do we start changing those laws, knowing that they are colonial era laws, which we inherited, and the countries which gave us those laws since then have gotten rid of them. And so it's now our time to get rid of it. Those laws help fuel the stigma, discrimination, and high levels of violence that persons from the LGBT community continue to be persecuted on a daily basis in different countries.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. The U.S. Air Force cheats departing trans troops out of retirement benefits. A majority of surveyed Chinese people support queer rights. And a Caribbean coalition defeats anti-gay colonialism. Those stories and more this week because you found This Way Out.
I'm Natalie Munoz.
And I'm Alan Tijamo.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 9th, 2025. Transgender United States Air Force personnel with 15 to 18 years of service will not be getting their early retirement benefits for voluntarily agreeing to leave the military after all. Trans and non-binary people being forced out of the U.S. military under President Donald Trump's executive order were initially offered the right to apply for a Temporary Early Retirement Authority, or TERA. As of August 4th, all TERA offers have been withdrawn, effectively denying full retirement benefits to voluntarily separating trans Air Force veterans. Before the sudden change, longer-serving trans and non-binary Air Force personnel could leave the military early with prorated retirement benefits, including health insurance coverage, disability benefits, and access to housing on military bases. Those troops now have two choices: accept a lump sum payout typically offered to junior service members for voluntary separation, or face being dishonorably discharged and denied any post-service benefits. There's no logical explanation of why the policy was reversed. A spokesperson for the Air Force admitted to The Guardian that about a dozen TERA applicants had prematurely received approval. However, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Manpower and Reserve Affairs stand-in Brian Scarlett intervened. His memo stated, "After careful consideration of the individual applications, I am disapproving all temporary early retirement authority TERA exception to policy requests." Colonel Bree Fram of the Air Force's recently created U.S. Space Force is the highest-ranking transgender service member in the U.S. military. Now on administrative leave pending separation at the end of the year, she posted on LinkedIn, "Even with all the upheaval of the past few months, these individuals finally felt that there was some sense of closure. Some had moved, accepted jobs, or had otherwise made plans. Now all of that is up in the air in addition to their loss of benefits." To Shannon Minter of the National Center for LGBTQ Rights, "The denial of benefits is devastating and a betrayal of a direct commitment made to these service members. the Human Rights Campaign and the queer legal advocacy group Lambda Legal are representing plaintiffs in a lawsuit challenging the Trump administration's ban on military service by transgender people. HRC Chief of Staff Jay Brown called the reneged separation policy cruelty for cruelty's sake.
A majority of people in China support LGBTQ rights. This, according to a new study released by the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law. 53% of the respondents in the August 4th report agreed that LGBTQ people should be accepted in society. A similar majority supported marriage equality, and 46% believe that those same gender couples are capable of successfully raising children. Once again, visibility fuels acceptance. 70% of the respondents said that they know at least one LGBTQ plus person, and almost half said that they know two or more. Additionally, 62% of respondents said that queer people should be treated fairly in the workplace, and even more said that the government needs to provide better protections for queer students. Those results underscore that the Chinese people are far ahead of their government. While private consensual adult same-gender sex has been legal in China since 1997, there are no discrimination protections, and same-gender couples have no legal rights. Positive portrayals of queer people in the media are all but banned. Equality advocates in China applauded the survey results. One Beijing-based activist told the queer news outlet The Edge, "Public support is a powerful force for change. And this data shows that more Chinese people than ever want to see their LGBTQ plus friends and family treated fairly and equally."
Pediatric gender-affirming healthcare will be illegal in New Hampshire, the first state in the New England region to institute such a ban. Republican Governor Kelly Ayotte signed HB 377 to specifically prohibit anyone under the age of 18 from getting puberty blockers or hormone treatments to assist gender transition. It also forbids surgery on minors, more of a hateful political specter than an actual treatment option. The law carries no criminal penalties for medical providers, but they can lose their state medical licenses. They can also be sued by minors and their parents. Minors already receiving gender-affirming puberty blockers and hormone therapies are allowed to continue treatment when the ban takes effect on January 1st, 2026. Ayotte's characterization of a balanced bipartisan effort to protect children is misleading. In fact, only two Democrats support the measure in the Republican-dominated state legislature. Courtney Reed of the ACLU of New Hampshire was just one of a chorus of queer advocacy groups condemning the new laws. She called them merciless, cruel, and painful for transgender young people, their families, and their doctors.
Massachusetts' existing protections for transgender and reproductive health care are enhanced under legislation signed by Democratic Governor Maura Healey. The nation's first out lesbian governor signed the SHIELD Act 2.0 on August 7th. The state's original SHIELD law was signed by Democratic Governor Charlie Baker in July 2022. It prohibited states that have banned pediatric gender-affirming care and abortions from punishing those who travel to Massachusetts for treatment. The new law goes on to prevent the disclosure of a physician's name and other sensitive data. Local law enforcement is prohibited from cooperating with other jurisdictions in their investigations. The law also requires hospitals in the state to conduct abortions during an emergency if they are deemed to be a medical necessity. Arlington Democratic Senator Cindy Freedman was a key architect of the law. In her words, "The legislation is fundamentally about protecting our state from those outside who wish to decide how we in Massachusetts choose to deliver health care and the values we decide should drive that care."
The 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals will not hear a challenge to Oklahoma's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care. Plaintiffs had requested a preliminary injunction to prevent the ban from being enforced while their challenge to its constitutionality is litigated. The appeals court upheld a lower court's denial. 10th Circuit Judge Joel M. Carson III stressed that the Oklahoma decision was delayed until last month's U.S. Supreme Court ruling on Tennessee's similar law in the Scrimeti case. He wrote for a 3-judge panel, relying on Scrimeti, we affirm the district court's preliminary injunction denial. Lambda Legal, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the ACLU of Oklahoma represented plaintiffs challenging the ban. In response to the appeals court rejection, their joint statement reads in part, while we and our clients consider our next steps, we want all transgender people and their families across Oklahoma to know we will never stop fighting for the future they deserve and their freedom to be themselves.
Finally, the Anglican Church of Wales has its first female archbishop. Cherry Van makes double history as the Welsh Church's first out lesbian leader. Van was one of the first women to be ordained as a priest in the Church of England in 1994. She became the Archdeacon of Rochdale in 2008, making her the first woman to become a senior priest in the Anglican Diocese of Manchester. When she was elected Bishop of Monmouth in the Church in Wales in 2019, she became only the third woman to hold the rank of bishop in the Welsh Church. Joining the Anglican Church in Wales allowed Van to go public about her 3-decades-long civil partnership with Wendy Diamond. Unlike the Church of England, the Church in Wales does not require its clergy to be celibate and allows them to have same-gender civil partnerships. Van's predecessor, Andrew John, was essentially forced into retirement following allegations ranging from financial improprieties to sexual abuse under his watch at Bangor Cathedral. Promising to work to bring healing and reconciliation and to build a really good level of trust across the church and the communities the church serves, Van won a 2/3 vote in the church's electoral college out of 5 candidates. Speaking for the Global Anglican Communion's conservative network, Archbishop of Nigeria Henry C. Indukuba said, "The Church of Nigeria condemns, unequivocally rejects, and will not recognize the election of Cherry Van as Archbishop of Wales." On the other hand, Van's election was welcomed by her fellow patron of the ecumenical Christian LGBTQIA+ community Open Table Network, the Reverend Rosemary Hill. Hill says it's a source of great joy and celebration. For LGBTQIA+ Welsh Anglicans, this is a momentous occasion that demonstrates how far the church in Wales has come in terms of equality and inclusion in the last decade.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending August 9th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Natalie Munoz. Stay healthy.
And I'm Alan Tihamo. Stay safe.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. An informed community is a strong community.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool
the road to legal equality for LGBTQ people in the Caribbean has never been smooth. There was one setback just 5 months ago when an appeals court in Trinidad and Tobago reinstated its anti-sodomy laws. However, This Way Out's David Hunt brings us better news from St. Lucia, where a pro-queer coalition is on a winning streak.
St. Lucia's history is a rich tapestry. So says the island nation's tourism authority. But if you dig a little deeper, you'll find not so much a tapestry as a battleground. Since it was settled by indigenous groups, including the Arawaks and Caribs 2,000 years ago, the Caribbean island has been contested territory, fought over for centuries by Dutch, French, and British colonizers. And although the island gained independence in 1979, the battle to free itself from oppressive colonial-era laws continues. Thanks to a recent High Court decision, St. Lucia joins a growing number of Caribbean countries weaving an inclusive, more equitable future, a true tapestry. I'm David Hunt. Join me as I explore a rising and very successful coalition of community organizations tearing down the pillars of the Caribbean's colonial past, one island, one lawsuit at a time.
You can talk to your father, talk to your mother, eyes on you. Can only talk to your mind, talk to your soul, eyes on you.
A few weeks ago, in July 2025, the High Court of St. Lucia, a division of the Eastern Caribbean Supreme Court, struck down two anti-gay sections of the country's criminal code. Section 132 imposed a 10-year prison sentence for gross indecency, a crime that applied only to same-sex sexual activity. Section 133 imposed a 10-year sentence for buggery, defined as anal sex between men. Both laws were holdovers from St. Lucia's time as a British Crown colony. The court struck down both laws, declaring them unconstitutional and incompatible with modern democratic principles and human dignity. The victory in St. Lucia is just the latest in a series of stunning legal triumphs, organized and spearheaded by ECAID, the Eastern Caribbean Alliance for Diversity and Equality, an umbrella of 26 community groups across 9 island nations, headquartered in St. Lucia. The organization challenged and overturned anti-LGBTQ laws in Antigua and Barbuda in June 2022, St. Kitts and Nevis in August 2022, and Barbados in December 2022. A case in Grenada is pending. Longtime Caribbean activist Kenita Placid, ECAID's executive director, spoke with me shortly after the court victory in St. Lucia was announced. Good news after a long court battle.
Definitely some good news have come in this week. I mean, in spite of everything that's happening across the world, happy to see that St. Lucia have finally delivered the decision we have been awaiting the last year.
I asked Placid why the organization decided to target anti-gay colonial-era statutes in 5 countries, an ambitious goal by any measure.
In 2015, we actually had a convening of countries, of organizations across 7 of the islands, small islands, looking at the laws. What if, as activists, we were to challenge those laws, recognizing that we do not necessarily have a government buy-in? One of the things that came about was the need to do the advocacy, the need to advocate for our population. But more importantly, how do we start changing those laws, knowing that they are colonial era laws, which we inherited, and the countries which gave us those laws since then have gotten rid of them. And so it's now our time to get rid of it.
Unfortunately, few LGBTQ people in the Caribbean are unaffected by anti-gay violence or threats of violence, Placid explains.
Those laws help fuel the stigma, discrimination, and high levels of violence that persons from the LGBT community continue to be persecuted on a daily basis in different countries. I will tell you the personal story that had me drive this. I think for me, LGBT persons have always existed. And in some countries, through the media, you hear how an LGBT person is killed, But when it happened in my own country, with loss of friends that I knew very closely, and these people were murdered on their perceived or actual orientation, it made me want to do something different. It made me want to see change. But the one that hits me most, losing this young boy at the age of 17 in 2016, and that brutality where his mom asked me why and I couldn't answer. Because there are laws and people think that taking a life of an LGBT person is technically preventing them from committing a crime, but taking their life is also a crime. So, you know, there's this kind of oxymoron of an excuse. And this is some of the driving force behind the fight for not just equality and justice, but equity to the LGBT community.
The Eastern Caribbean encompasses an arc of small islands, from the Virgin Islands in the north to Grenada in the south. Islands with diverse peoples, cultures, languages, traditions, and histories. At a time when the United States is turning away from acknowledging, much less celebrating, diverse cultures, the Caribbean islands proudly embrace their multicultural heritage, the threads of culture, geography, and humanity that bind them.
The one thing I tell people, each country is unique to its own self. It's beautiful in its own way. The beaches, the culture, the food. I've come to a place where I don't compare Caribbean countries anymore. That's a fight to happen if you're among Caribbean people. And my advice is always stay away from comparisons.
ECAID, the Eastern Caribbean Alliance for Diversity and Equality, has been successful in organizing in the region because it empowers local groups, amplifying their voices without co-opting their missions. You could say that's intersectionality done right.
ECAID was formed really to unify voices across the region, to increase our numbers in terms of access to funding, because each island are small and sometimes funders do not necessarily see them as making the impact. So bringing all those voices together was one of the things that we really championed to do. Even within our membership, although there are about 14 organizations that are LGBT focused, I like to think that we also look at the holistic wellness of an individual. And so there are also other organizations that focus on other areas like climate change, environmental justice, food justice, health and security. You have organizations that work primarily with women and girls. There's one organization that's actually focused on using culture and drama and arts as a way to social change. So I think it's looking at all the different areas of intervention and advocacy, but the intersectionality of issues that affects an individual beyond their sexual orientation and gender identity. And so ECAID really is one of those think tanks. It's a network, it's an umbrella, it's a think tank for those small islands.
When you turn on the radio, watch your
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt, continuing my conversation with Kenita Placid, Executive Director of ECAID, the Eastern Caribbean Alliance for Diversity and Equality. In 2015, ECAID convened a coalition of community groups. One of its goals? To challenge anti-LGBTQ laws in 5 Eastern Caribbean countries. Its track record is remarkable. Of the 4 cases decided so far by the region's Supreme Court, all have been successful. The latest, in July 2025, overturned two anti-gay criminal statutes in St. Lucia. I asked Placid about the high cost of litigation.
ECAID only took the lead in bringing people together and bringing ideas together and strategy, but each of the countries actually have organizations that worked with us to do this on the ground. And then we actually reached out to a group called the University of West Indies Rights, an advocacy group. And so one of the things we did was reached out to lawyers who were part of what they call the pro bono grouping. In each of those countries, we have been fortunate to actually get lawyers who did those cases pro bono. The expenses really came about with the planning, the filing, and some of the support needed for the education and sensitization, the research, particularly on the attitudes towards LGBT persons and some of our security plans. So really want to say, you know, a huge thank you to all the organizations on the ground trusting us to do this. Some of the international organizations like HDT, Human Dignity Trust, the Caribbean Vulnerable Coalition, the HIV/AIDS Legal Network, all of those organizations were able to do different aspects in researching law and packing the cases. And this is why, when we look at the varied number of stakeholders, I think it is definitely showing in the strategy that has been employed.
While the legal landscape is changing for the better in the Caribbean, the work of building a welcoming, inclusive, and equitable society will likely take generations. It's worth the effort, says Placid.
I think the experience of existing in a community that do not understand or do not accept LGBT persons is a difficult one. It's a difficult road. I think when we look at maybe a decade ago in the Caribbean, your rite of passage was basically through religion. You were brought to church and you're told this is Adam and Eve and this is how things are supposed to be. And then when you start feeling different, there's a lot of questions. Why am I different to my sisters? Why am I different to my brother? And when other folks get to know and they bully you and so on and so forth, it escalates. I want to be able to see young people raised in a country where if they are questioning, they do not need to hide. And the one thing I would have to say, my last message would probably be, is that we have gotten the laws changed. We are getting legislation to more positive legislation. It does not mean the hearts and minds of the people have changed. Cultural and social change takes much longer. And so there's still a lot of work to be done.
I'd like to thank Kenita Placid for speaking with me for this program. Placid is Executive Director of the Eastern Caribbean Alliance for Diversity and Equality. Find the organization online at ecequality.org. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Natalie Munoz and Alan Tejamo, with thanks to David Hunt, and produced by Brian DeShazer. David Hunt also produced this week's feature. Paul Simon, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Young Lords, and Roger Rivas performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Beaupre of Los Angeles, California, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappelle, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on CJLY, Slocum Valley, New Denver, Nelson, and Crawford Bay, British Columbia.
KTWH, Two Harbors, Minnesota, WLRI, Christiana, Pennsylvania, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
A queer arts collective celebrates 13 years.
I get to use burlesque and queerlesque as a form of gender exploration and affirmation. And I really enjoy spaces like Planet Queer.
You know, that's our mission, is to have a space for queer creativity, further the liberation of all.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucy Chappell. Foreplay gets gay Indonesian men 80 lashes, Allah is lesbian t-shirt lands Moroccan feminist in jail, and honoring 13 years of Planet Queer cabaret play. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Marcos Najera.
And I'm Lucy Chappell.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 16, 2025. A pair of Indonesian college students is set to receive 80 lashes for same-gender sex. The unnamed 20 and 21-year-old defendants were arrested in April in a public restroom at Taman Sari City Park in the province of Aceh. Witnesses reported seeing the men enter the bathroom, prompting the police to break in. It could hardly have happened in a more dangerous place than Aceh. While secular law governs most of the Southeast Asian nation, since 2014, both Muslim and non-Muslim people in the province have lived under strict Islamic law, or Sharia. Same-gender sex violates both religious and secular laws in Indonesia. Even though they were only seen hugging and kissing, the Sharia court decided that those actions would legally and convincingly lead to gay sex. The prosecution had asked for sentences of 85 public lashes with a cane for each man. However, Judge Rahmadi M. Hum lowered the penalties by 5 strokes each because the men had been polite and respectful in court and had no previous convictions. Hum's August 11th reduced sentences also reflected the 4 months the men have already spent in jail. Canings under Aceh's Sharia are extremely painful. Up to 100 lashes can be prescribed for other morality offenses, such as adultery, gambling and drinking alcohol, or for men who skip Friday prayers, or women whose clothing is deemed too tight. This is the 5th time an instance of men being publicly caned for same-gender sex has been reported in the province since the first such conviction in 2017.
Wearing a t-shirt that reads, "Allah is lesbian," her social media selfie is captioned, "In Morocco, I walk around with t-shirts bearing messages against religion, Islam, etc. You tire us with your sanctimoniousness, your accusations. Yes, Islam, like any religious ideology, is fascist, phallocentric, and misogynistic. That's why feminist and human rights activist Ibtissam Lashgar is under arrest. Criticizing Islam is considered blasphemy in predominantly Muslim Morocco, punishable by up to 2 years in prison. The public prosecutor's office at the Rabat Court of First Instance announced on August 10th that Lashgar had been placed in police custody, charged with blasphemy for wearing a shirt with phrases offensive to the divine, along with a caption insulting Islam. By trade, Lashgar is a clinical psychotherapist and criminologist. She co-founded MALI, the Alternative Movement for Individual Liberties. She's been arrested several times since 2009 for challenging Islamic law and defending women's and queer rights. During her years of activism, Lashgar has been the target of cyberbullying, getting thousands of threats of rape and death, and calls for lynching and stoning. The Moroccan Penal Code prescribes 6 months to 2 years in prison and or a fine equivalent to $2,000 to $20,000 for any attack on the Islamic religion. Prison time can be up to 5 years for an outrage committed through public means, including electronic platforms. Moroccan and global human rights groups are calling for Lashgar's immediate release.
Hundreds of people celebrated LGBTQ Pride in Nepal's city of Kathmandu on August 10th. Pride has become an annual part of the Hindu majority's traditional Gai Jatra festival, when relatives who have died during the past year are honored. Queer celebrants and allies wave rainbow and trans pride flags and hoisted banners reading Pride for all intersectional queer identities, transgender men are men, and transgender women are women. It was the first Pride since the Trump administration canceled substantial foreign aid to the country, principally through the now dismantled U.S. Agency for International Development. Significant funding for LGBTQ community and HIV/AIDS groups were cut. Most queer community centers in Nepal have been shuttered for lack of financial support. Thousands have been deprived of various forms of humanitarian care. Nepalese queer rights activist Simran Sherchen remains optimistic. At the Pride rally, she said, "Because of the cut in funding, many of the services we have been providing to the community have been hit badly. But we are not discouraged, but are hopeful we will get alternative sources and fundings to help us restart those services."
A second U.S. federal appeals court has upheld a state's ban on gender-affirming health care for trans patients under the age of 18. The full 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals reversed a lower court decision that had struck down Arkansas's pediatric trans care ban as unconstitutional. The 8-2 vote was announced on August 12th. It follows the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decision to uphold Oklahoma's ban last week. Both rulings cited the U.S. Supreme Court's late June Scarametti decision in favor of a pediatric gender-affirming healthcare ban in Tennessee. Arkansas was the first U.S. state to outlaw gender-affirming healthcare for trans minors in 2021. Its constitutionality has been argued in U.S. District Court in the Eighth Circuit ever since. A three-judge panel of the appeals court upheld lower court injunctions preventing enforcement of the ban in 2022. However, the justices approved a request by Republican Arkansas Attorney General Tim Griffin last year for the full 10-judge panel to reconsider the case. It now goes back to the lower court for review. The courts are at odds with every major professional U.S. medical and mental health association, including the American Academy of Pediatrics. They all consider the availability of reversible puberty blockers and hormone therapies vital for the physical and mental well-being of transgender young people.
A school district in Virginia is standing at the bathroom door to block the Trump administration's order to abandon its toilet access rights for transgender students and staff. The U.S. Department of Education charged the Loudoun County School District with violating federal Title IX statutes banning sex-based bias in education. Neighboring districts and four other Democratic-leaning suburbs of Washington, D.C. also face department scrutiny. Non-compliant districts could lose federal funding and face action from the Department of Justice. Close to 100 students and parents rallied in support of trans bathroom access ahead of the board's August 12th meeting. The debate lasted 4 hours. The near-midnight vote was 6-3. The unwavering statement read in part, the Loudoun County School Board remains steadfast in its commitment to ensuring that every student in Loudoun County Public Schools is safe, supported, and able to thrive. We also remain committed to complying with applicable law and to protecting the rights of all students. Accordingly, current school board policy permits students to access bathrooms and locker rooms that align with their consistently asserted gender identity and provides alternative facilities for any student who requests them.
Finally, an 18-year-old biracial cisgender lesbian high school student is not putting up with bathroom harassment in an Owatonna, Minnesota restaurant. Gerica Mudra was followed into the bathroom by a female Buffalo Wild Wings employee who called her a man and demanded that she get out. Mudra was goaded into showing the employee her breasts. The Twin Cities advocacy group Gender Justice filed the action with the state's Department of Human Rights on Mudra's behalf on August 12th. The restaurant is charged with violating the Minnesota Human Rights Act, which bans bias based on actual or perceived sexual orientation and gender identity. Senior staff attorney Sarah Jane Baldwin said in a statement, "While she is not transgender, the scrutiny and harassment Mudra faced is unfortunately all too familiar to trans and gender-expanded people, including masculine-presenting queer women. No one should be harassed, humiliated, or forced to prove themselves just to use the bathroom." Thus far, there has been no comment from Inspired Brands, manager of the Buffalo Wild Wings chain. Gender Justice let Mudra express herself in a YouTube video.
"This wasn't the first time something like this happened, but this is like the worst time. This one, like, she kept it going. She was like not screaming, like, she made me feel like very uncomfortable. Like now, like after that, like I just don't like going in public bathrooms. Like I just hold it in. And now like I just think like, oh, I'm gonna get harassed. I'm gonna keep getting harassed like this. I just want like people to know like they're not alone. Like they're not the only people like this happens to. It's okay to stick up for themselves and be okay with who they are."
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude for the week ending August 16th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Marcos Najera. Stay healthy.
And I'm Lucia Chappelle. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
There's no business like show business. Like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow.
Fortunately, you don't need a billionaire oligarch's ego-driven rocket ship to get to Planet Queer. It's not a galaxy far away. It appears monthly on the east side of Los Angeles in the Silver Lake neighborhood. It's an out-of-this-world queer artist cabaret at a little watering hole called Akbar. Our Brian DeShazer helps the originators celebrate 13 years of LGBTQ performances.
We're here with Ian McKinnon and Travis Wood, the executive director and creative talent behind Planet Queer. Ian and Travis, welcome to This Way Out. So, Ian, why don't you tell us first, like, what is your background and what Planet Queer is?
Yeah, well, I have a background in theater, and then I started getting interested in performance art. So I have been curating, like, gay men's nights and doing solo performance stuff. And then around 2009, it felt like there just needed to be more venues for queer people. And it felt like everyone needed more work, you know, more more ability to do their work and to improve and to grow and to experiment. And so I was like, oh, there should be a monthly thing. And so I started something at Highways called Queer Mondays in 2009. And we did that for 3.5 years. And so then when we made the jump to the East Side, Travis was like, hey, I want to help. Like, how can I help you? We, you know, created a new show called Planet Queer at Akbar.
Travis Wood.
I think it was actually just the intention of having a space for performance artists or queer artists in general to perform. It was important for the art as well of performance art was needed to have a place to experiment. And I think that was more of the goal.
So you're in a bar called Akbar over on the east side of Hollywood. The space is pretty small. Tell me about the space itself and how you sort of create the space each week.
The space is actually in the back section of Akbar, and we transform it into a small theater. We wanted to have an experience. We wanted people to come to Planet Queer and have an environmental experience as well, and to celebrate art. I also come from an arts background and a lot of performance art when I was younger. And the two, just, I really love the environmental experience, and I wanted to create that for more people.
You know, I think providing queer space is to also have a it's political, it's a place for freedom. And
what kind of we haven't even mentioned this, what kind of performers perform at Planet Queer?
I mean, it's a true variety. I mean, we have people who do spoken word. We have musicians. We have performance artists. We show video work. People have done puppetry. People have done Foley work. I mean, it's really a space for freedom, for queer freedom. And but I would say overall, there is sort of an activist setting that people respond to, that Planet Queer, you know, when we, as Travis was saying, when we're setting up the space, it's like this transformative, you know, wanting people to feel like they're transported to another world in a way coming there. I think part of that is to make a setting, and part of that setting is this activism that we believe in, that furthering, that, you know, it's the artist's job to further liberation for all people.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's our mission, is to have a space for queer creativity to further the liberation of all.
You know, I wanted to talk particularly about that in the opening of, you have a ritual.
Oh yeah, it's so fun. We start the night with the queer activist workout, which is like an audience warm-up / aerobics workout routine. And it was developed as a way to get people into the spirit of Planet Queer environment. And so I think the workout, yeah, it's basically a workout. We get everyone on their feet. We get them moving their bodies. We get them locating their sexual core and making sounds. They're high-fiving each other and bumping butts. And, you know, and then we do these chants and call and response things. So it's kind of like part pep rally, part queer, but it's all with this idea of let's get more queer.
Oh, these people came warmed up, so let's take them to the aerobic section. That's right, it's the queer aerobic section, starring John Travolta and Academy Award winner Jamie Lee Curtis. Do the Jamie Lee, it's an awkward shoulder movement. And let's do a visualization. I want you to imagine all the queer phobia of the world, all the bigot religious leaders and corrupt politicians and people who are mean to you in middle school. And I want you to make a fist and punch those in the face and say, kill queer phobia, kill queer phobia, kill queer phobia, kill queer phobia. Now quick high five as many people as you can and say, queer's rule.
I think it came out of the idea of feeling like, you know, the world isn't so nice to queers a lot of the times. And, you know, in other countries, we can be murdered and killed for and jailed for just doing our cabaret night. And it felt like, you know, we had the ability to do it, so we better do it.
and let's chant the letters, shall we? I say lesbian, you say power. Lesbian.
Power.
Lesbian.
Power.
I say gay, you say love. Gay.
Love.
Gay.
Love.
I say bi, you say visibility. Bi.
Bi.
I say trans, you say revolution. Trans.
Revolution.
Trans revolution. Beautiful. Let's take a little cool down. Give yourself a stretch. Just stretch your sexy queer body right now, okay? And give yourself a shoulder roll. Just let that hetero-dominated world roll off your shoulders. As you prepare for this evening of experimental queer performance, and tune into your heart, put your hand on your living...
For many years, Planet Queer was witness to Robert Patrick, queer playwright of some note, poet, playwright, singer-songwriter, and bon vivant. In his 80s, Robert wowed the audiences with his wit and wisdom.
He was a tremendous songwriter, and I think Planet Queer, yeah, in the last 10 years of his life, that's when we knew him, he had a career as a cabaret singer.
Do you have a great memory or a memory of Robert performing at Planet Queer that you like to regale?
There's so many, because he would burst out into song at any random moment, and he would make it up on the spot, and I absolutely loved it. Bob loved everybody, anybody, any age, any ethnicity, anybody on the planet could get along with Bob or totally hate him. My absolute favorite of his was probably the Like a Rainbow song, which is kind of like the theme of Planet Queer. And he wrote that song, and I wish I had the lyrics in front of me. I would sing it right now. It was just really beautiful, and we all miss him a lot.
They thought they knew that pink and blue would do to color me and you. But now a whole new spectrum's breaking through. Ooh, like a rainbow, LGBTQ, like a rainbow, LGBTQ, like a rainbow, rainbow, LGBTQ. Ooh, they thought it true that Annie Lou could be dubbed M or double.
We've talked about singers, dancers, drag queens, performance artists, spoken word, burlesque. Their specialty is swallowing swords. That's what they do for their performance. We've seen sword swallowers at Planet Queer, have we not?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like when we started, performance art was more of the form, sort of abstract, experimental theater work was what people were kind of bringing out. I mean, there was always everything, storytellers and dance. And then I remember there was sort of a time period when musicians discovered Planet Queer, and it felt like people, the art form went into, actually before that, in a way, I feel like drag, you know, really exploded and took off with RuPaul's Drag Race. And so the focus of queer art was taking that form. A lot of the queer creative energy was going into that kind of form. And then it felt to me that maybe singing and pop music and experimental avant-garde music, musicians were coming, like Pain Behavior and I don't know, so many. Recently we've been having like a burlesque renaissance, or that the burlesque dancers are, queer burlesquers are finding us and bringing poles and doing the whole thing. And that's wildly creative and so fun.
I think everything that you're mentioning is actually very politically related. I know that technology changed, which allowed people at home to make music a lot easier. It was very trendy for a while, for everybody was a musician coming into Planet Queer. And then the dance revolution, and then the drag queens really started popping up, not just because of RuPaul's Drag Race, but also because of the war on drag queens here in America. The burlesque community in Los Angeles is facing a crisis of not having any places to perform. And they are also dealing with a lot of misogyny within the community. So places, bars, bar owners, club owners don't want to give space to women who are doing burlesque events. So Planet Queer has, I have noticed, and in conversation with some of the burlesque dancers, it is a place for them to go and experiment and to still be able to do burlesque within a inviting, safe space.
So I perform as Fleur the Tease in my feminine mode and as Tricker Tease in my masculine mode. I get to use burlesque and queerlesque as a form of gender exploration and affirmation. And I really enjoy spaces like Planet Queer in order to get to do that.
Is can you describe what it's like being backstage at Planet Queer?
It is that energy of just, you've got drag queens, you've got dancers, you've got poets, you've got musicians, and we're all sort of jostling around each other. And you can hear what's going on stage. And then you get into your costume, and there's just always somebody like leaning over and going, "Oh, it's gorgeous. Oh, where did you get that? Where did you find that?" And there's just this beautiful community aspect to it, and this chaotic bustling, because that, my favorite thing about Planet Queer is that you never know what the show is going to be like, because it is so beautifully experimental and they're constantly welcoming in new people, that you just get to have this crazy magic backstage of just a whole bunch of weird queer artists going, "Oh, that was so cool," or "Oh, this," or "the, oh my goodness, look at those pasties." Like, it's just fabulous.
Ari, a.k.a. Odious Ari, has been performing at Planet Queer for over 12 years.
Yeah, oh my gosh, backstage is so much fun. It's maybe one of my favorite parts of the entire show. Because it's like the Muppet Show or something, you know? It's like every crazy act under the sun. Everybody's got a crazy costume on. You don't know what's going to happen. And everybody is super friendly, like so warm and kind. And if we don't know each other, we introduce ourselves. Yeah, I don't even think there's a full length mirror back there. I'm not sure. I remember because there's two bathrooms. And so it's just, you get in there when you can, you know, or can I come in while you're doing your thing? But I remember jumping up and down in order to try to see anything below my neck. Because I'm so short. But everybody's really pleasant. Like, nobody's fighting over, there's very little room. There's two bathrooms. There's just stuff everywhere. Everybody's got all kinds of gear, and there's like a table to put stuff on.
And what does it mean to you to have a place to perform that?
Yeah. Oh, it means so much. It's the most consistent performance opportunity I've ever had in my life, you know, like all those years, and I always have a place to perform.
You can watch some of the various acts performed at Planet Queer on their YouTube channel, and you can find out more at their website, planetqueer.org. I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out.
Let's go!
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by myself and Marcos Nahara and produced by Brian DeShazer, who also produced this week's feature. Orleans, Ethel Merman, and Robert Patrick performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Richard Merck and Brad Payton celebrating their 50 years together, Lee Sloan of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KQUA Roseburg, Oregon, WGGT Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 3UGE Alexandra, Victoria, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
We are proud to announce exciting news. KBOO Community Radio has been voted the best radio station in Portland by Willamette Week readers. In June, Willamette Week held a citywide poll to celebrate